everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, brought to you by our friends at Loot Crate. The best surprise you know is coming. Be sure and get to lootcrate.com and check out how you can sign up for something that's just a ton of fun every time it arrives for you. We're going to talk some Chicago Bears football here. I am Hub Arkish, the editor and general manager at Pro Football Weekly. Arthur Arkish, our senior editor and NFC North reporter for USA Today Sports Weekly. We spend a lot of time around the Chicago Bears. We've seen a lot of things from the Chicago Bears. And this week, things got a little strange at Halas Hall after a really disappointing loss to the Green Bay Packers. Arthur, it's ironic. They go into a bye on such an upbeat, tenor, even though that they had lost to the New Orleans Saints. They'd played them really tough. They were 3-3 in their last six, 2-2 in their last four. Easily could have won five of those six games. I mean, you can argue they should have beat the Vikings. They were there with the Saints. And then they go out and just mess the bed against the Green Bay Packers. And all of a sudden, all this euphoria in Bears Nation goes right off the edge of the cliff.
Hub, it was hard to know which team had the extra week to prepare and which team had one less day coming off a Monday night embarrassment, frankly. But the Bears were awful, and you talked about the strange, curious explanations at Halas Hall, and we'll get to those in a minute. But I think any Bears fans who were kind of hanging on to hope that this offensive staff was going to suddenly, the light bulb was going to flash on, and they were suddenly going to learn. And let me be clear, and I think we have on this podcast, their hands are a bit tied. This skill group is not good. It's one of the worst in the league. But listeners who thought that maybe all of a sudden the Bears were going to learn how to at least maximize what they did have to work with, I feel like those hopes probably went out the window this week, if they didn't Sunday, in listening to the explanation of the coaching staff and how people weren't used. And Tariq Cohen is certainly example number one.
Well, it shows that there is just not a lot of great offensive thinking on that Bears coaching staff. It started with head coach John Fox on Wednesday at Halas Hall. I was there, and he was asked about the 13 snaps that Tariq Cohen got. He was asked on Monday, came back to it on Wednesday. It wasn't specifically why he only get 13 snaps, but about their inability to feature him in the offense. And Fox talked about the fact that, well, defenses are double-teaming him and taking him away, and that's causing them to go to other things. Well, they don't have anywhere else to go. And then Dowell Loggins, the offensive coordinator, comes in the room after and talks again about how he's unable to take advantage of Tariq Cohen because of what defenses are doing, so they're reacting to those defenses. And my immediate reaction was, what kind of quality coaching staff allows a defense to dictate to them what their offense is going to do? Could anybody imagine a Bill Belichick or a Sean Payton or a Pete Carroll or a Mike Tomlin, or, you know, name a head coach who would actually step up and say, well, we can't do that because the defense won't let us? That's not the way you play football in the National Football League.
Hub, I think you said it was 13 snaps for Cohen Sunday. But let's be clear, the Bears have failed to feature him since week three. I mean, he got off to a great start. Everyone was so excited about the human joystick, and he has suddenly become an afterthought in this offense. And I'm struck by the just unbelievable irony in those comments that you just mentioned. Tariq Cohen was drafted in the fourth round, correct? Mm-hmm. To be a mismatch creator. That's his purpose in the NFL, is to use that explosiveness, to use that suddenness, and to create mismatches on linebackers, safeties, whoever it's going to be. And for the Bears to not see that is so troubling. And I'm sure Ryan Pace was troubled by it, because I think he understands. I'll get into it more in a minute, but it looks like you've got a response to that, and then I want to get back to something else, some of the other satellite backs in this league who are taking it by storm right now, and how Tariq Cohen is unable to be one of those guys, apparently.
Well, I mean, here's the real problem with it, and it just struck me that I guess I didn't specifically make this point in my column that I wrote on Wednesday night for Thursday, and now I'm pissed at myself, but sometimes 600, 650 words can be a little limiting, is that the initial question, what started the line of questioning on Monday, was, why did Tariq Cohen only get 13 snaps? Now, the focus on Wednesday in the conversation with Fox and then Loggins, who was not available on Monday, was not about the 13 snaps so much as why he's not getting the ball. And it strikes me that when their response is, well, defenses are taking him away. They're double-teaming him. In fact, Loggins explained when they came out on that first third down and they lined Cone up at wide receivers, the Packers went to a Tampa 2 and doubled him, and it was the first time he had seen a defense actually double him, and they took him away. So they went to Kendall Wright, and they converted the third down. So here's the point. If, in fact, defenses are stacking to take away Tariq Cone, somebody else is open. So right. He should be on the field for every snap because that is going to create a mismatch for you anywhere else. And they don't seem to understand that.
Yeah, it's strange. And just specifically with that game plan Sunday, so the Packers come in without Morgan Burnett. So and he's been their Swiss Army knife. He is what allows the Packers to spend most of the game in their what they call their nitro package. They have three safeties on the field, and it brings more speed to the field. It's the type of response that they have to some of these mismatch creators that we're referring to. So you know they're not going to have Morgan Burnett. You know you're going to see more of Jake Ryan and Blake Martinez, who just have not shown an ability. They just don't have the speed to hang with someone like that. But here's what really gets me. The Saints had one of the best rushing performances Sunday in Buffalo that we've seen in the NFL in the past decade. How did they create more opportunities for Alvin Kamara to get on the field alongside Mark Ingram? Sean Payton traded away a Hall of Famer in Adrian Peterson. So do you think defenses are dictating to Sean Payton how he is going to deploy this rushing attack? No, he made a bold move, got rid of Peterson. His rushing attack has been unstoppable. I'm not saying that Alvin Kamara is... Tariq Cone is Alvin Kamara. He is smaller. He's probably not even as down-to-down of a guy as Kamara is. But I think that that's the type of ceiling that maybe Bears fans would like to hope that they can get in their own backfield that has plenty of dynamic traits, and we just have not been able to see him consistently.
Well, the flip side of that, Arthur, is that Jordan Howard's a better running back than Mark Ingram. Jordan Howard's one of the two or three best young running backs in the league right now, and they're not taking advantage of him either because they're putting him in bad situations.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say I think he's better, but they're both excellent, and they have the same style, and they should both have a chance to dominate. They're both excellent.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously this is a subjective conversation. I'm sure you're not the only one who would argue with me, but I'd counter with he was the second leading rusher in the league last year as a rookie and didn't get in the starting lineup till week four. So I think he's one of the three or four best young backs. Mark Ingram's been around 6-7 years,
yep.
Never done what he's doing the last couple weeks. But that, we digress. That's irrelevant. I think most teams would like to have either one of them right now. My point was going to be, here you've got Jordan Howard. They don't know how to use him either.
Right.
One of the things that I counted Sunday night after the game in my column about that was that through the first three quarters against the Packers, the Bears had 12 first down calls, not including the two-minute drive at the end of the second quarter, because that's obviously you come out, you're all throwing.
Mm-hmm.
They ran the ball on 9 of those 12 first downs. They only ran the ball 17 times all day, only 15 times with their running backs. So they have no concept how to take advantage of their ground game either. Now they start to talk about, well, we got injuries on the offensive line. When you have injuries on the offensive line, you commit more to the run. You don't get away from it because there's never been an offensive lineman who wouldn't rather run block than pass protect.
This is, I think we would agree, you know, it's supposed to be, more irony for you, it's kind of a West Coast variant offense that's supposed to create mismatches, it's supposed to set up play action, but when you're that predictable and when you're getting behind the chains constantly, as Hub just alluded to, and I haven't seen Dowell Loggins want to commit to the play action game really much more than he wants to commit to the run, but the point is, you can't really do it if defenses are one step ahead of you, and I think it's safe to say now that more often than not, Dowell Loggins is getting better. Badly out-coached and out-schemed on a weekly basis.
Well, and that's really the point, because I think there's another major point to make today before we, you know, wrap this podcast, which is, in fact, the sky is not falling. And in fact, nothing happened Sunday that is definitive, but it was just the most blatant example of how really undermanned the Bears are on the offensive side of the football in terms of their coaching staff as well as their talent. Now, you know, I think at the end of the day, John Fox, it was interesting watching him because, again, I was there in the room Monday and Wednesday, and he definitely, there was a difference in his demeanor. And while he, one thing I got to give the man credit for, he is adamant about the first answer is always, I'm the head coach, it's my fault, mm-hmm. or I'm responsible, or
sure.
I'm accountable. And he said that on a number of occasions Monday and Wednesday. But you could also, in looking at the context of his complete answers, see that he's frustrated by some of what's happening too. And one answer that struck me in particular was when asked about, you know, who's responsible for the game planning, he said, hey, I'm the head coach. I'm involved in all the game planning on offense, special teams, and defense, you know, early in the week, But during the game, the play calling is done by my coordinators. And so he wasn't throwing him under the bus. He was just making a point. Mm-hmm. And that's the reality of it. You know. And so what he's doing is he's coming in Sunday night and Monday and looking at film with these guys. They're self-scouting. They can talk all about, you know, what they're doing wrong. On game day, he's not the one calling those plays. He's not even in a position to change plays because you're on a clock in which you've got 40 seconds and the microphone on the quarterback's helmet shuts off at 15, and Loggins probably doesn't get to play to Trubisky till 25 or 20. So, you know, at the end of the day, this is very much on Dowell Loggins relative to the offense and, you know, Vic Fangio relative to the defense. And by the way, the defense didn't play very well on Sunday either, which leads us to point number two. Injuries are not an excuse. They're never going to be an excuse. There's no question about that. But Danny Trevathan right now is the defensive player the Bears can least afford to lose on a given Sunday. You're already down Jarrell Freeman. You don't care because Christian Jones has been a revelation. You're anxious to have Nick Kwiatkowski on the field. But you're also down Willie Young, and that has been a significant loss. You're down Quinton Demps. Adrian Moss made some noise for a week or two, and now he's kind of quiet again. Okay, so... you know, the defense was still playing really well. People thought that Akeem Hicks didn't have a good game. He actually had a real good game. He just didn't have a sack. He didn't show up. But he was eating two and three blockers, as was Eddie Goldman. But the guy who is the linchpin of that defense right now is Danny Trevathan, and they were without him. And I think that's where they got hurt on the ground. And I think Bears fans better get prepared, because even though we're recording this on Thursday, he hadn't practiced yet this week. And with those calf injuries, that's tough for a while.
Excuse me.
I was just going to say, flip it around on offense. The guy in that line you can least afford to lose is Kyle Long.
Right.
Not because, I mean, he is your best player, but beyond that, hasn't been this year. We understand he's been injured. But what happens is then you're moving Cody Whitehair out to guard where he doesn't belong, and you're putting Hronas Grisu in at center. And I think it's safe to say I held off a long time on going after Dowell Loggins, but I think it's pretty clear now he's not the answer. It's pretty clear halfway into his third year that Hronas Grisu is not a good third-round draft choice. And so, you know, you can't ignore these realities. You can't use them as excuses, but they're a big part of the problem.
A lot to unpack there. I just wanted to give you credit, actually, because I believe 3 or 4 weeks ago you said that Danny Trevathan was the most indispensable player on this defense, the hardest to replace, and certainly we saw that Sunday, so I do want to credit you. I don't know why you always want to call Adrian Amos Adrian Moss, but you're right. Adrian Amos has not showed up in the playmaking
is
department.
Is there an Adrian Moss somewhere in the
I'm not sure. I was racking my brain. It's racking my brain to think of it. I like Hronas Grisu so much. I know you do, too. He lost a season to an ACL. Yes, he has been badly overpowered. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't want to give him the benefit of the doubt. It hasn't really earned it, but I do just want to see him a chance to be healthy and try and sustain some success on the field. But, you know, obviously we haven't seen that, and you're right. The domino effect of losing one offensive lineman. What about the fact Kyle Long was up Sunday, even though they really had no intention of playing him? He was up only for an emergency status. What does that say about your inability to get the 52nd or 53rd guy off the roster, risk putting him back on the practice squad? I don't understand. It's not like the Bears have this deep roster where they couldn't afford to have someone else up that they were going to be able to use potentially.
There's two schools of thought on that, and I am very much in the minority, but as you've probably learned through the years, I can be a little stubborn. I don't mind being very much in the minority. I believe this to be the case. I think a lot of our listeners know that I do the Bears pregame and postgame show on game day on The Score.
Yep.
And the postgame show, my partners are Olin Krutz and James Big Cat Williams.
Legendary Bears.
Who know
offensive
just a little
lineman.
Bit more about offensive line play than I do. And that was an understatement, obviously. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't debate them on these subjects. But in this particular case, they both were beside themselves, not understanding how Kyle could allow them to put him in a uniform and not put him on the field. And they said it just didn't make sense. I had a different take on that. I think it's quite possible that neither he or Tom Compton were able to go. It was that simple. There's only 8 linemen on the roster. They had to dress 7. You've got to have an emergency guy out there. Mm-hmm. Which of the two unable to go are you going to put out there if you have to in an emergency, even though they're unable to go?
Okay.
And that's why I think Kyle was out there. Knowing Kyle, my guess is nobody was more upset than he was to be standing there in uniform with a baseball hat on. But I could be wrong. That's my, you know, these guys, that's information that even if they gave it to me, it would be off the record. But that's kind of my read on that.
So what, he ended up playing one snap, I believe, just on special teams.
I think somebody was having an equipment issue on the sideline. They had to run somebody out there, and he ran out there. I think it was on a field goal attempt.
All right, so, you know, it's so weird. Trubisky, Mitch Trubisky threw for, I think, 297 passing yards. That was easily a career high for him. He didn't play well, though. I think we can agree on that. I think we've said about, you know, we alluded to the offensive line struggles and the poor blocking that was there in both the run and the pass game. But Trubisky took some sacks he didn't need to as well, and a pretty incomplete performance for him as well.
Yeah, because he's a really admirable young man, he tried to take responsible for all right. five sacks and talk about how well his offensive line played. That's not true. The offensive line didn't block the run particularly well. They were okay in pass protection. I think of the five sacks, two of them were clearly coverage sacks, and that's not necessarily anybody else's fault. But the other three, you know, the one he clearly screwed up on the boot where he had, I think it was Josh Bellamy out in front. He just had to get the ball to him quicker. Instead, he ate it.
His coaches then, called it a cardinal sin
yeah,
yesterday.
Yeah, because then he thought he was going to run away from the defensive line. He just couldn't do it. So yep. that one was clearly on him. Then there were two others where the question is, you know, was it coverage? Should he have just thrown the ball away? Did he miss a check down? He made the mistakes that you expect a rookie to make, you know, in his fifth NFL start. Beyond that, he wasn't awful. The one troubling thing that we've seen showed up again very clearly. There are three balls that I can think of where he stood firmly in the pocket with both feet planted, missed badly. This guy who's supposed to be so accurate, he's really accurate on the run. He is not always as accurate when he's standing flat-footed in the pocket. Now, he's talked about that being a mechanical issue. I agree. I think that's something that can be fixed. But a lot of the immature rookie woes showed up.
So Mitch Trubisky's fifth start. It was Brett Hundley's fourth start, I believe.
Third start, I think.
Brett Hundley's
he took over in the
third.
Vikings game, yeah.
Okay. Is it fair? I know it's not apples to apples, but Hundley looked pretty darn good, and McCarthy clearly is getting through to him a little bit, and you're seeing him not repeat mistakes. Is that fair to say? This Bears staff isn't getting through to Trubisky, and he's repeating some mistakes at this point?
No, it's not, only because you got to remember that Hundley's had the advantage of two full years of watching sure. the best quarterback or one of the two best quarterbacks in the
Absolutely.
NFL.
Yep.
And that's training camps, that's OTAs, that's practices. He should be much further along than Mitch Trubisky. And I was on the sidelines for their game for the Westwood One call 6 days earlier, where he was much worse Monday night against the Lions than Trubisky was against them. So I don't think any comparisons there mean all that much. I think it's a caution to Bears fans. And I talked about this, I think, on our Chicago Football TV show on CIU last week. All this perception that, oh, for the first time in 25 years, the Bears have the better quarterback. No, going into that game, they didn't. Trubisky and Hundley were the same. They're young prospects who are being developed, and Hundley should be a little bit further along. He also had Jordy Nelson, Davante Adams, Randall Cobb, Ty Montgomery. You know, Trubisky has none of that to work with. And even with the Brian Bulaga injury, their offensive line was solid from guard to guard. The interior of their line was in pretty good shape. David Bakhtiari does a nice job. So, you know, Hundley should have played better than Trubisky, and he did.
It's the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. He's Hub Arkish. I am Arthur Arkish. Make sure you're checking us out on iTunes. Subscribe to us there. Leave us a rating and a review. Thank you to our great sponsor, Loot Crate, our great producer, Dan Mott. And we are discussing the Bears' sixth loss of the season, another series sweep against the Packers. And we got to spin it forward a little bit now, though, because the Bears are moving into what I would have to call spoiler roll for another season.
Yeah, but that's the other major point I wanted to make today, Arthur, because that's all they were ever in. I mean, if anybody deluded themselves into thinking they were going to make a playoff run at 3-5 based on the team that they have and the limitations they have, you were just kidding yourself. What I think was the excitement during the bye and in the break there was the reality that the schedule is much softer the second half, that there's definitely 5 or 6 winnable games out of 8, although they've already lost one of them that we thought was winnable,
right.
And that this was a team that was going to play much better football in the second half and begin to establish some things that they could build around for 2018. That's not gone. I think just because they stunk against the Packers, you can't forget how well they played 4 straight weeks before that, even though they only went 2-2. If the Bears play 95 to 100% as efficiently as they were in the 4 games leading up to the Packers game and their remaining 7, they're going to win 4 or 5 of them. You know, and I think the big questions are, is the collective coaching staff going to find a way to either help Loggins, or is Loggins light going to go on? Are they going to do some things on offense to figure out where they can get better? And are they going to get healthier? Because I look at the Lions this week, and if I thought for sure that Danny Trevathan was going to be 90 to 95% and he was going to play, I would pick the Bears because I saw them the 4 weeks leading up. I've seen the Lions. They're vulnerable. There's ways to attack. But without Trevathan, I don't know that the defense can perform to the level that it was prior to the bye.
And we should add that the Bears tend to play the Lions pretty tough. Matthew Stafford had his worst game of the season last year at Soldier Field. The Lions still won that game, I believe. Yes, they've won 7 of the past 8, actually, in this series now. But for whatever reason, Vic Fangio seems to typically have pretty good game plans in store for Matthew Stafford. We'll see if he has another one of those Sunday. But like you said, Danny Trevathan is an integral part of this.
We should know this. Anybody listening can check it. I thought the Bears, that was one of their 3 wins, that Soldier Field game last year. I could be wrong. I probably am. But
we'll check.
If you're listening,
check.
It's not hard to do. Coming in, the Lions' offensive line is mediocre to poor. They don't run the football. There's nothing unique about their defense. I mean, this is – I don't even know what the spread is. The Bears won't – I know I said this on the show last week. The Bears never should have been a 6-point favorite over anybody. That was ludicrous. But you understood why they were favored. I suspect that won't happen again for a couple weeks. But this is a winnable football game for the Bears if they just do what they were doing leading up to the bye.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm sorry. It was their first win of the season, 17-14 at Soldier Field. And I believe that's the only time they've beaten the Lions in the past 3 years now. So anyway, what concerns me, I guess, about this one, we mentioned can you see the Lions potentially putting up a bunch of points? Certainly they're configured that way to threaten that, and it's for the same reason you just said. We're not sure the Bears could potentially get into a shootout and win, obviously, but Matthew Stafford is playing really good football right now, and he is going to be, you know, test number one for this Bears defense.
Stafford is a quantum leap from Brett Hundley,
right.
But there's no way you're going to take Marvin Jones and Golden Tate and the rest of that group over the Packers receiving group. Now, Jones and Tate are playing really well. Jones had a great game on Monday night and followed it up with another pretty good one against Cleveland. But, you know, one of the things that was interesting, cornerbacks live out there on the island, you know, and there's no question that Kyle Fuller had his weakest performance of the year against the Packers. But even in that, he still made 3 or 4 really nice plays. And so it's not like Kyle Fuller's done now, like that's over, you know. You'll see how he bounces back. They get decent play from Amukamara and Cooper on the other side. You know, the secondary hasn't been bad. I don't think the Lions come in and just automatically light them up. I think what was a real disappointment was their inability to get pressure on Hundley.
Right.
But with this Lions offensive line, you got to know that Hicks is going to be pissed, you know, and I'm sure that Fangio is going to change some things up. He'll blitz a little bit more if he has to. I think they'll get some pressure on Matt Stafford. I think the secondary will play a better game, and I think they'll be more competitive that way. What I worry about is because the Lions are a poor running team, will they ignore it to the point where they let, you know, Amir Abdullah have a big run or Theo Riddick or somebody, and Stafford will make some plays. But I just don't see any reason that the Bears shouldn't be competitive in this game.
Yeah, I suspect you're right. The Lions did get Taylor Decker back last week. He was in a rotation out on the left side with Corey Robinson. I'd expect him to play a lot more, but that's against Pernell McPhee mostly on the weak side of the defense and Sam Acho, some combination of those two. So it will be interesting, and Stafford's been killing the blitz recently. He started rough last week, threw an interception, took a sack and threw an interception on like his first 4 or 5 dropbacks last week, and then just caught fire, ended up with 3 touchdowns, and the Lions did what they do. They came on late and they put away the Browns after it looked like they could potentially be in trouble there. Ended up putting a season-high 38 points on the board. So it'll be an interesting test. I think Bears special teams is going to be another one to watch this week, Hub, because Trevor Davis had a couple nice returns against Jeff Rogers' unit. And Jamal Agnew, the Lions rookie punt returner, I believe is the only NFL returner with a pair of touchdowns. And he is not someone you want to forget about because obviously the Bears have enough limitations in trying to score points, and you don't want to compound things there.
You know, it's interesting because it's something that nobody has really talked about, and it wasn't just last week. The Bears special teams have been awful all year long, and going into last week.
Pretty much for 3 years now, right?
Well, but I'm not as bad as they've been this year because going into last week, they were 29th in the league covering punts and 30th covering kickoffs. Nobody is comfortable when Connor Barth goes out there to kick a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
I think Patrick O'Donnell's having probably his best year punting.
Yep.
He's not unique, but he's in the top 10 in the NFL in net punting average. But all things can, and the Bears are just middle of the road returning, you know, and that's because Cone, you know, gets one every once in a while. So, yeah, that is an area where you have to be concerned. And, you know, one mistake can really hurt you because this kid on the Lions is a revelation. You know, he's got the two big – I'm sorry, his name is escaping me right now.
Jamal Agnew.
Yeah, Jamal Agnew.
Rookie sixth-round corner, I believe.
Yeah, two long punt return touchdowns. I mean, he's a threat to go at any point.
He's not Michael Campagnaro or Bobby Rainey, who I believe also both had house calls against the Bears. Or one of them was a touchdown, one of them a really long return to set the Ravens up. So, and I'm trying to remember now. Jeff Rogers' special teams unit was okay last year. It was awful in his first season, and it's awful this year. So that's two out of three.
Now we should make one point. His best special teamer is Sherrick McManus,
yes.
who has been out for what, three or four games now with a hamstring.
And his second best was probably Nick Kwiatkowski, who's now been forced into an elevated role on defense. It's just that's the cumulative effect of the injuries the Bears are dealing with. So, Hub, we only have a couple minutes left here on the Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, and we still have to make predictions, but what else do we need to hit on in this game? You know, like I said, the Lions have had the Bears' number, but this doesn't feel like it's going to be a one-sided affair. It should be another competitive game.
Yeah, the thing that I really wanted to make sure we didn't get away from, because it was fair to beat the hell out of Dowell Loggins for 20 minutes, which we did. I don't like doing that. I hate doing that. You know, people need to understand our jobs in the media. I never want to see anybody get fired. I never want to see anybody get cut. But we are paid to analyze this stuff objectively, and we're at the point where it is fair to beat up the Bears' offense and the job that Dowell Loggins has done. The flip side of that, though, and I'm going to say it one more time, is that when you look at John Fox and you evaluate his situation, if he gets this team back over the next 7 weeks to where they were going into the bye, he's not necessarily done by any means. I mean, a 7-9, an 8-8, and a one-year extension and a commitment to a new offensive coordinator. I'm not predicting that. I'm not saying that's what I'd like to see, but you got to watch the next couple weeks before you can overreact to last Sunday and say that's it. You can have your opinion whether he should go or not. I'm not even going to go there. I don't know that I.
We'll have time for that on the coming weeks.
But I'm talking to our listeners now. Don't assume that this is over,
right?
Because it's being watched very closely now. I haven't had any sit downs with Ryan Pace in the last couple weeks, but I can assure you his mind's not finalized yet.
Sure.
And so that's going to be something very interesting to watch over the next couple weeks, how they respond to the disaster that was last Sunday.
And I think, as we both made it a point to already say on this podcast, John Fox doesn't get a pass because Dowell Loggins has been so awful. John Fox hired him, and he does oversee this whole operation. So we're not giving Fox a pass for the offense's ineptitude, but we're just trying to kind of compartmentalize things here.
All right, so as we wrap our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast, I'm getting old and my memory is disappearing on me. Do we make picks or not? I can't remember.
We have been.
Okay, then we probably should again. I'm going to start with a cop-out pick, and I know I can't do it. If I thought Danny Trevathan was going to play Sunday, I would pick the Bears. That's how strongly I feel about where this young defense is at and where it's going and what I think it can do to keep them in games. But I've dealt with calves. As of our taping, he had not practiced going into Thursday. I don't think there was any indication he was going to practice on Thursday. I don't think he's going to play, and I think that's a loss this defense can't afford. So I think the Bears are very competitive, but because of Matt Stafford, the Lions probably find a way something like 20-16.
I'm with you. I'm not picking the Bears again this week. I have them scoring a few more points. I've got 24-20 Lions. I think the absence of Danny Trevathan would loom particularly large because Theo Riddick has suddenly become re-assimilated in this Lions offense again, and Trevathan's the guy that you need to kind of cover him. I also believe that Detroit is tied for the NFL high in takeaways. If they're not, they're second or third, and I worry a little bit that if the reins are loosened on Mitch Trubisky this week, it could potentially be the one where he stumbles into a mistake or two and the Lions capitalize.
Yeah, they were second in interceptions, I know, going into last week's game against the Browns. I'm not sure how they came out of it. So that'll do it for this week's edition of our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast. Our thanks to our great sponsor, Loot Crate. The best surprise you know is coming. Be sure and go to lootcrate.com and check it out. Make sure you watch all of our TV efforts, both at WCIU with Chicago Football Now, and of course at NBC Sports with Pro Football Weekly. And we look forward to visiting with you again next week right here on our Pro Football Weekly Chicago podcast.